We had conference with labor negotiators. We had a personnel matter that was discussed, but no final action was taken. And we had a student personnel matter that we also considered. The chair will entertain a motion from the board.
We need to do consensus.
I'll move the recommendation.
Thank you.
I think we're on consensus in order of business first.
We just have a motion right now on the floor. Is there a second?
I'll second.
We have a motion by Mr. Millar and a second by Mrs. Roger. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And we'll return then to the consensus on the order of business.
I'm good.
Okay. Is everybody okay with that? Okay. And then we have approval of minutes. Okay, there we are. Mr.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I have to get a date here.
Okay. Having some technical difficulties here. Yeah,
I am.
One second.
What's the
on May 16th?
I'll move approval of the minutes of May 16th.
I'll second.
As a motion by Mr. Buffman and a second by Mr. Quisenberry. All in favor?
Aye.
And then we have our student representatives. Good evening.
Hello. Dr. Eisendrath Rogers, could I have the podium for a moment on that very topic?
Absolutely.
Okay, so as you know, every year we have student representatives representing our three high schools, Pacific Beach High, Morro Bay High, and San Luis Obispo High School. And while Ellie is unable to attend tonight, I will bring a similar acknowledgement to her tomorrow at Morro Bay High. But since we do have Caroline with us tonight, as is our tradition, I'd like to send her off to the University of Georgia with our thanks from the board, from myself and my staff, for just doing a fabulous job for us this year, representing the students at San Luis Obispo High so well, and setting a great example for Ratik, who will fill in for you next year. And, you're a class act, and you've done a fabulous job for us and helping inform us as to what's going on at San Luis Obispo High. So from us to you, thank you. While I have the podium, just really quickly, every opportunity to acknowledge someone that has done an exceptional amount of work and quality work through the years. Three decades of service to our district, and she continues to act like she just started last week. She's amazing. She's my executive assistant, Mrs. Kim Holmes.
Wonderful. And just let me say that the reason Ellie couldn't be here tonight is that she's at the honors program at Morro Bay High School tonight. And Caroline, would you care to give us your report and then also introduce your... No, you can't be replaced, but, you know, for next year's representative.
So this is Ratik Shinglot. He'll be a senior next year, and he's replacing me next year. But, yeah, he'll be in this seat for the following meetings to come. So he's great. You're welcome. So to start us off for San Luis Obispo High School, the sports stats are 2 weeks old, but they're still relevant. Softball, unfortunately, lost 4-1 in the second round of CIF playoffs recently and finished as Pac-8 League champions for the first time in, I think, a decade, so that's great. Zach Hilty traveled to Carpinteria last week to compete in the CIF individuals for boys tennis. Zach, unfortunately, lost a close match to the third seed in CIF. Callum Bolger and Annika Morsdorf competed in CIF Masters for track and field at Arcadia High School recently, and Callum finished as a state champion.
Yeah.
Also, congratulations to Callum Bolger and Grace Park for winning the Male and Female Student Athletes of the Year Award. And congratulations to Sheila McGuire of Girls Softball for being named Coach of the Year. And overall, as a school, we won 5 Pac-8 league championships.
Wow.
In ASB news, a couple weeks ago, we held the annual Black and Gold Golden Tiger ceremony, where several students were recognized for their hard work for all level classes. We also recently just finished up our last intramural sport of the season, intramural trivia. And the winners were Will Compton, Lucas Mackin, Casey Liebrick, and Ratik Shinglot of the Quizzards. Also, we had our senior recognition assembly 2 weeks ago. The entire senior class sat on the floor of the gym, and the eighth graders came in from Laguna and other schools. And the seniors were recognized for their plans they're pursuing next year. Also at that assembly, we honored 4 teachers for finalists for the Francis Warren Teacher of the Year Award. Kate Stevens, Tim Fay, Marcy Badal, and Jack Greer were all honored, and the winner was Tim Fay. And, yeah. continuing our tradition, the seniors today as our last day of high school, we did the annual paper toss today at 3:10 in representation of no more school, so that's fun. Also, tomorrow's the annual senior picnic. Thursday is our senior showcase at the PAC at Cal Poly, and graduation is on Friday. The jazz band had a breakout showing 2 weekends ago at the Santa Barbara High School Jazz Festival. Not only did the band receive first place in intermediate division, but many of our soloists were also honored as well, including Thomas Green, Ben Rosenberg, Cisco De La Garza, and Kit Scriven, and Brianna Chambers. So that's incredible. And last but not least, preparations for the 2017 California Mid-State Fair are in full swing at San Luis Obispo High School. Over 75 students are raising livestock and will compete at this year's California Mid-State Fair. So that's pretty much it for San Luis Obispo High School. Coming to an end.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And now stepping in for Ellie tonight, Elizabeth Robles.
Hi. So as she said, I'm stepping in for Ellie Fryer tonight, and she just wanted me to begin by thanking everyone in the district for being so supportive with her in Morro Bay High School throughout her school years. So thank you guys very much for that. For Morro Bay High School sports, all of our sports have recently concluded with sophomore Jake Furby making it all the way to state in track and field. Throughout his process, he broke a school record and made great leaps after having only been practicing for about 2 months, so we're very, very proud of him. This past week, ASB put together a teacher appreciation lunch and presented a video of recognition to each of our amazing teachers. Yearbooks have been distributed to our students within the past week, looking over a really great school year that Morro Bay High School has had. Our senior tribute night is being held tonight in the high school, and it is going to be underway in about an hour. Tomorrow is our senior outing at the Ravine, so while everyone is finishing up their finals, our seniors are having a very well-deserved celebration before their graduation. Before graduation, the seniors have the opportunity to go back and walk the halls of their elementary schools in their cap and gowns, and that will be taking place on Thursday. And graduation will be held this Thursday from 5 to 6 in the Morro Bay High School Stadium, completing an amazing school year for the class of 2017.
That is a great idea for them. It's a great role model for the little guys. Moving on to correspondence, we did receive a letter from the Jewish Community Center Federation of SLO. And now moving on to public comment, we do have anyone who would like to speak to any item that's on the agenda. And if you'd like to see which items are on the agenda, they are the blue sheets that you see at the back
yellow
table. And if you are interested in speaking on something that is not on the agenda, you may do so by filling out one of these yellow forms. However, you do need to know that the board can only speak in response to items that are on the agenda and not anything that is not agendized.
Yes.
Yes, of students. I know you may stay or you may go on to your activities of the evening. Thank you. And there will also, for those speaking tonight, be a timer on the screen for you.
Wait till Kim gets it set up.
So I have several requests to speak. First would be Mary Thielscher. I think that's how you pronounce it. And you'll have 3 minutes. Did I turn it on? There we go. First will be Mary Thielscher, and you have 3 minutes, and there's a timer up there. We'll reset that to 3 minutes.
All right. Good evening. Thank you for allowing me to speak this evening. I'm here on behalf of a young man who's a senior at San Luis Obispo High School. But it's really not just for a young man who's a senior at San Luis High. It's really for any senior around the country. I feel like this is an important issue. I'm going to read a letter that I wrote out to a lot of people that were on my email list and asked for it to be forwarded on, and then I'll comment on that. First, I want to let you know I'm a community member here in San Luis Obispo. I have 3 boys that have gone to Slo High. One's graduating on Friday. And I have 2 jobs. One of them is child advocacy and one is family advocacy. And so I wrote to my friends and to people that I thought would be interested. I'm writing to change a policy with our school district that is in need of changing. One of our seniors and other seniors around the country are missing the opportunity to walk for graduation. Slo High School senior Grayson Stewart got in trouble for drinking at the senior prom on May 20th, 2017. As per school policy, he was removed from prom, suspended for 3 days. He missed the senior recognition day 24-hour relay. In addition, he'll be missing grad night, senior picnic, and senior showcase. These punishments are harsh, they're heartbreaking, but they are the consequences. Most of the policy's consequences are understandable and very fair. Where we feel the policy needs to change is that he is not allowed to walk for graduation ceremony on June 9th. This is excessive. High school graduation is about giving yourself and your family a way to signal that you are, in fact, moving from one chapter of your life to another. You make this symbolic walk to the next chapter of your life in front of classmates, teachers, and people who care and love you. Graduation is also a gift for family and friends who have supported you emotionally, mentally, financially, and academically through all of your school years from kindergarten through grade 12. As we all have talked about, and every psychologist will tell you, it takes a village to raise children. And Grayson is one of our children that we've all had the opportunity and the blessing to be able to raise in the community, as are all the rest of you seniors, and my senior as well. So I understand that he knew, and all the seniors had an assembly and understood what the consequences would be, as they are all year long if they happen to do something that breaks the rules of the school. And I understand the punishments, as harsh as they can be and as heartbreaking as it would be to miss out on all the fun events with your friends that you've been working towards. But I feel like the senior events and anything else that might happen are senior events that will come and go, and as sad as they are to miss them. But walking seems to be such a huge thing. And I feel like on a psychological level that, you know, we do things we're sad we did, we feel bad we did them, we have remorse or regret or whatever it happens to be, but I feel like not walking for graduation, which is a process from kindergarten through 12th grade, can just be possibly permanently damaging to a child. I mean, they'll go on and they'll look back on that. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Next would be, I believe, Erica Stewart.
Hi, thank you for having me as well. Do you want me to wait?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you for having me as well. I'm Erica Stewart. I'm Grayson Stewart's mom. And we're deeply disappointed in the poor decision he made to drink at prom. We get that it is a very serious decision. We get that it's illegal and that he should not have done it. That's not a question. Not only does he have discipline in our home, discipline at school, as Mary listed out, so I won't list it all over again, but he's also been given a minor in possession ticket and will have to go to juvenile court and work with the many disciplines that they might choose to provide. Those disciplines could be anywhere from a $250 fine to a $1,500 fine, community service, which he's already starting on, suspension for a year of his license, as well as probation for a year. So I think with this long list of discipline, he gets it. He had to call every single member of his family to tell them that this is why he won't be having his party, etc. I think that was probably the hardest thing to do for him completely, is to tell everyone that he made a very poor decision. But as Mary mentioned, we are choosing to treat one student and one mistake as though he is a dropout and a delinquent. He is a 3.5 student. He has been on junior varsity and varsity team of soccer every single year. He helps the homeless. He helped the Tiger Olympics. He helped with numerous events on campus. He has a 3.5 GPA. He's not a bad kid. And this is not just for Grayson. As Mary said, this is for all kids. This is a decision that affects your life for good. Thank you. This is a decision that can make you start to spiral downward and consider yourself a bad person and continue to make more and more bad decisions. This is a decision that did not receive any education from the school. He had one drug and alcohol 15-minute visit yesterday with a counselor. That's it. How is he supposed to learn from there to improve against peer pressure when he continues on in the workforce and in the four-year college that he'll be attending? How does this train him? How does this help him become the adult that he should become? We do a lot at home. Clearly, we didn't do enough, and we will continue. But this is a lapse in judgment for one time. And why is the rest of his entire achievement of kindergarten through 12th grade completely wiped away by one decision? So I feel that the zero-tolerance blanket policy that we have is not appropriate. I'm not gone. There's another child coming in a couple years. I'm happy to be on a task force, a committee, whatever it is. But this policy needs to change. Commencement should not be taken away from anyone. Thank you.
Thank you. Shay Stewart.
Thank you for allowing us the time. Like it said, my name is Shay Stewart. I'm Grayson's father. One of the things that we have struggled with, and I'm not going to rehash everything else, but we kept hearing about student safety. As we went through the process, as we met with the administration, as we worked our way through the chain of command, and student safety came up time and time again. And while I respect that and I think that's great, at no point has it been brought up that the school and the administration of the school failed Grayson in providing him a safe prom environment. Students were not checked. Their bags were not checked when they walked in. You go to the movie theater, your bag is checked. You go into the Ravine Water Park, your bag is checked. You go into the fair, at the Mid-State Fair, your bag is checked. Grayson witnessed alcohol and other drugs being consumed at the prom. Imagine yourself as a 17-year-old at your high school prom. Would you have the strength to say no to your friends when handed a flask and asked to hold it because they didn't have a jacket? Very few young adults have that ability. The administrators talked about how they educated the seniors. They talked about it ahead of time. They informed them of the consequences. As educators, we know that the frontal lobe of the adolescent brain is not fully developed at 17. We're expecting a 17-year-old to reflect back on a meeting that happened weeks previous and to make a decision in that moment, in that emotional state of elation and celebration with their friends and peers staring at them, and to be strong enough and say no. Grayson was caught. He was identified. There was a statement, and we were told that there was a flask being passed around, and Grayson had it. Yet he was the only one pulled out of that prom. No other students were pulled out that were in his group or around him. And if we're worried about student safety, why were no other students breathalyzed? How do we know where they were at their consumption levels? So I struggle when we talk about student safety when we don't worry about the safety of all the students. It's very easy to identify one student and have a martyr to point at. At no point has there been any restorative justice piece. Not one single administrator at that school asked Grayson why. What was he feeling? What was going on? What was the decision-making process? Yet it was he was the aggressor, he was the one in the wrong, and yes, he made a bad decision. We are not arguing that. We have not argued that at one point. But when we talk about student safety, we've got to do it for all the students, and we have to be more proactive. If we know that we need breathalyzers, if we know we need to have our school resource officer at prom, then we know we need to do a better job protecting them and protecting all of them. Thank you.
Zach Wise.
Hi. Firstly, thank you all for your time today. I appreciate you letting me speak. I haven't necessarily been a model student my time at SLO High, but I feel as a student witnessing some injustice, it's my duty to speak on behalf of Grayson. I'd like to start by saying people make mistakes. It's kind of a fact of life. I'm sure everybody here has made a mistake. I'm sure you probably moved on from it and vowed not to make that mistake again. The beginning of junior year, I personally was also suspended. I don't really need to go into the details of it, but I'll say that it was a mistake, and it was one that I won't make again. I understand the necessity of a punishment. It's, you know, it's necessary to punish to enforce particular behavior, but severity should vary with a person's crime and their past record. And how close the offense was to graduation is pretty much what we're going off of here on Grayson's punishment. When I was suspended, I had a minor activity ban, and when I came back to school, everything was back to normal. It didn't really inconvenience me that greatly. Grayson's being very heavily inconvenienced, and it's pretty much just because his mistake was made closer to graduation. All the things Grayson has done over the last 12 years to walk across that stage are kind of being ruined by one bad decision he made over the last 4 years in his time in high school. His family, extended family, and friends will not be able to have the opportunity to see his hard work pay off just from having him walk across the stage. In my time at SLO, Grayson was never anything but an asset to the school environment through his charismatic personality and his contributions to our soccer team. To take away from all of the good he did from one bad action is kind of a shame. I feel like I get the punishment, the activities ban. He's going to have to miss out on senior picnic. He's going to have to miss out on grad night and all a bunch of stuff. But just walking across the stage, it's 10 seconds of walking across the stage for 12 years of work. And to take that away from him for one mistake over his 4 years of high school, just because it was close to graduation, seems like a disappointment and kind of an injustice. So that's what I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Grayson Stewart.
All right. I want to start off by saying that here is a petition from the students with 168 signatures just in one day for the right to let me walk just based on my action and the activity ban. They agree with the fact that they would like to walk, that I should be able to walk, even though I did make a mistake, and I'm owning up to that, and I know that I shouldn't have done drink of the problem or held someone else's flask, and that's a mistake that you shouldn't make, and especially at that time of the year. And based on that, I'm now not going to be able to walk. And I also want to clarify the situation as for punishment. Some people are saying that I'm just going to get let off if I do get to walk and it's overturned, that I'm just not going to do anything about it and not learn from my mistake. In this case, I'm like my mom said and my dad said, I'm getting plenty of other punishments, such as punishments with the law, like an MIP and other stuff. And also, I want to say that I'm not just like any other student that's looking to like party all the time and make mistakes. Like, I play soccer, that's why I was late. I was at club soccer practice. I play all year round. I'm going to play NCAA Division II soccer team next year in college for a 4-year. And also, it's my first offense with something like this, and I feel that it's kind of harsh to make one mistake in 12 years of education, like it's been restated, to get this punishment. Also, in many cases, people that graduate from our school don't go on to get a college degree. So if you're taking this away from them, it would be much worse than in my case, because they would never get a chance to get the second degree and show people what they had accomplished in 13 years of education. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Jim Johnson.
I'm My name is Jim Johnson. I'm the Student Activities Director at San Luis Obispo High School. I had no intention on speaking on this topic tonight, but I felt moved to. I actually came to watch Carol's last meeting and to see that. But you've heard a number of students support Grayson. I don't even know Grayson. I've never taught Grayson. But I am the Student Activities Director that put on that prom and oversaw that prom. I'm the student activities director that was there at 8 o'clock in the morning putting on decorations and there to 2 o'clock in the morning cleaning it up. I worked with the students that put that event on. I worked with the students that worked their tails off for students so that they can enjoy an environment where it is safe. Speaking of a couple of things that have been said earlier is we did have a school resource officer at the dance at Mountain Brook Community Church and Community Center. Additionally, we randomly breathalyze. So we are taking precautions so that people come into our dance and they don't drive under the influence and they don't come to our dance under the influence. We are taking a lot of actions, I believe, appropriate actions to discourage students from drinking and doing other things and coming into our dances. Obviously, we had 475 kids at that dance. Obviously, a lot of those students understand the repercussions of making bad decisions, and obviously they didn't make the bad decisions. It's disappointing. I feel badly for the young man, but all of our students were warned numerous times not to do anything stupid before graduation. We purposefully set a meeting for all the seniors, and we go through all the things that the students could lose if they make bad decisions. And yes, graduation is one of those. Okay? I think it's incredibly important for us to create a safe environment for our students. We work on doing that at our dances. And by setting a bar, by saying you cannot come into our dances with alcohol and drinking beforehand, okay, or drinking at that dance, we are creating an unsafe environment by allowing that to happen. Again, I had no intention of speaking on this subject tonight, okay? But I do feel incredibly strongly that the rules were set out and people didn't follow the rules. And in order to make sure that we create a safe environment for the rest of the year for our students and for the rest of the dances to come, and not to put our dances in jeopardy, okay? The dances that our ASB puts on, okay? If we had this type of behavior all the time, we wouldn't have these type of events for our students. And it's incredibly important to have a line, to have a bar that, you know, you just can't cross that. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else who would like to address the board on a topic not related to an agenda item? Okay, seeing none, we'll close the public comment. Thank you very much for everybody making your comments.
Thank you. And now we'll move on to the Superintendent Business and Budget Report by Mr. Pinkerton.
Yeah, I know I've talked to the board a little bit about this in some of our notes to the board, but we actually rented out some of our field trip buses over the past month. So we talked to CISC about insurance and making sure that we recovered those types of things, and they said as long as it was for school events, not outside events, that we would be covered in terms of insurance. So the local field trip companies weren't able to help some of the schools. So we actually did three trips for Lucia Mar and one trip for Atascadero Unified for some of their playoff games because they couldn't get American Star. So Annie is kind of breaking that down, looking at it in terms of cost. So, but it could be something that could be potentially a profit maker revenue for us. So we're going to kind of see how that goes. Both districts were really, utterly pleased with both the buses, but also our driver. So we had the same driver go through. So it was really cool to see. So hopefully we'll see where that goes, and if it can go, it's got to pencil out. It's got to make sense for us, I think, in terms of long term. But we're going to analyze it, and I'll keep you updated.
Excellent. And we're moving on to the educational services update, Mrs. McGrath.
Thank you. As previously stated, we are wrapping up the end of our year. So last school day for most is on Thursday. And another really successful year, we want to wish our students a safe and really happy summer. We do have two graduations on Thursday and one on Friday. So just a reminder of that. We're kind of in the awards and ceremony season. So just a reminder there. And next week, we do have our elementary teachers that are hungry for more professional development and developing their reading understanding. So we have about 150 elementary teachers next year and next week, attending the Reading Institute. So I'm happy to see that and looking forward to continue learning in that.
And then Measure D update, Mr. Pinkerton.
Yeah, so just a reminder for the board, we are going to do a study session next Thursday. Focus of that is really to dive deep into the lease-leaseback contracts and kind of all the different phases of that, make sure that the board is very educated about all the contractual obligations and how that delivery method works. And then we're also going to spend some time with the help of Mr. Holcomb in looking at what the guaranteed maximum price. Because as we move forward now with both design build and lease leaseback, we're going to be bringing these GMPs back to the board for specific projects. And so it's going to be really important for the board to understand how we come up with those, how an individual project's GMP fits with the overall scheme of the budget itself, as well as the overall Measure D. It looks like we're headed kind of towards a end of July, looking at pricing for all of our projects with our construction firm. So that's really going to it's really going to hopefully provide some clarity to us in terms of for the board that here's what the voters approved, here's how much money we have, here's what the projects are coming out in terms of more clear estimates at that point. So I'm really looking forward to having that that knowledge level for us to move forward. So we do have a few small projects that we are definitely moving forward on this summer, one tonight that we're going to ask the board to approve, but the big picture of all the different projects, specifically the two comprehensive high schools, will be good to see in July. Mr. Moore.
Mr. Holcomb? Oh, Mr. Millar.
Thank you. So, Ryan, in the larger picture, when we've gotten prices figured out, mm-hmm. stuff, will we have a component built in to kind of deal with the fluid nature of some of these things, like engineering change orders or things in the contracts, or with fixed price, we don't have as much a concern about running over and things like that?
So, again, this is going to – I think on Thursday we're going to dive into that a lot more in terms of trying to break that down. But the fact that our two delivery methods now for construction delivery, the design build, lease leaseback, it hopefully alleviates some of that in terms of the unknowns, because now we have contractors coming on board early, looking at the plans, can look at the site, can do – pre-construction services agreements with us, so they can get in, they can look at what's happening, and we can get all of that we need to get done into the actual design that gets bid, right? So then the contractors, the subs, know exactly what work is going to be done. Now, that doesn't mean that we're not going to find caverns under the tennis courts at Slo High, right? So there's nothing that we could have done previous to that to know that was the case. So there's always going to be the possibility of some. But I think that where we're headed is definitely, working to alleviate that. And in particular, our goal, especially with design build, is to, are there ways of efficiencies making the entire project, come into budget? So those are really critical things. I wish I had more to say about the governor releasing Prop 51 funds, so we could go after those CTE dollars, which are currently not available yet. So hopefully that's going to be something this summer, too, that will tie in, because we are, we're all eligible for close to $20 million, which would be a huge supplement to our Measure D funds, because we had a lot of other projects that we would love to get accomplished throughout the district if we can get those dollars.
Okay. And you think, and we're expecting to hear by the end of summer about this?
Well, the governor's... It's kind of up in the air, but we're hearing talks of the first release coming out maybe at the end of summertime, first release of those funds. And we're doing all the paperwork. We're getting everything in line so that the day it opens, we can turn in all of our CT paperwork. So we're kind of using the same model and structure of paperwork that they used for the last bond measure when they had CT funds available. So we're preparing kind of that's along that same avenue so that we can jump right in if we can. And we have a lot of CT projects, as the board knows, CT programs at both comprehensive high schools that'll hopefully bring us in some good funds.
Thank you, Mr. Pinkerton. And we're moving on to item number 8.01, and this is Ms. Lang, prepared by Peggy Charlesworth.
Thank you. This resolution is one that we bring to the board every year. The purpose of this resolution is to give the board an opportunity to approve the transfers that we're going to need to do in order to close the books at year end, which we'll be doing all through the summer. You won't have another opportunity to approve our transfers until we bring our unaudited actuals in September, which is already after the books are closed. So we need your approval in order to do what we need to do to keep paying our vendors and close our books.
Thank you. Is there anyone from the public who would like to speak to this matter? Seeing no one. Ms. Sheffer.
I was just going to make a motion, if there's no additional discussion, a motion to approve resolution number 35-16-17, authorization for year-end transfers.
I'll second that.
We have a motion by Mrs. Sheffer and a second by Mr. Quisenberry. This is a roll call vote.
Mrs. Sheffer? Mr. Quisenberry?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Dr. Eisendrath-Rogers?
Yes.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Mr. Millar? Yes. Passes 7-0.
Thank you. Mr. Pinkerton is back at the mic to adopt the budget.
Yeah, so we actually have had two meetings with the board in terms of public hearing as well as reviewing the budget document at our last board meeting. Just for everyone to know, the budget is based on our best projections to date. And kind of, the governor comes out with a budget in January, May revise, which recently happened. But we really don't know for sure kind of where we stand in some ways, right, in terms of state funding levels and even federal this year until really July 1, when or maybe a little bit ahead of time. So, but based on all the information we receive in January and May, Julie, her staff, myself, put together kind of the board that we've, or the budget, I should say, that's gone through it. The board had made some really difficult decisions back in February because we knew we had a deficit coming up in future years, mainly due to STIRS and PERS increases, as well as some of the loss in our unitary tax revenue from Diablo Canyon. So the board made those decisions, those budget reductions for next year, focused mainly on the district office. And so from there, we took all of that. We kind of make projections in terms of our revenues for the following year. And this year in particular, we spent a lot of time detailing out the LCAP. So specific costs and really, trying to make sure that we all understood where every dollar that we allocate goes. And so a lot more detail and planning went into this budget as well as the LCAP and our LEA plan. So hopefully that's reflected in what you've been able to see and the documents themselves. And so we are able to meet all of our requirements with this budget in terms of our reserve levels with the county. And so I'll take any questions that the board might have in terms of the budget document.
Is there anyone from the public who would like to speak to this matter? Seeing no one, Mr. Buckman.
Thanks. This was a great budget presentation. It gets better every year. I just feel like I actually build a budget, which I can't, but it makes me it makes it easier for me to understand, and I appreciate it. I think two questions. One, and this we've talked about this, and Julie's responded to me, and I just want to get an answer so that the public can can hear. So we are approving a budget with a deficit, and I just want the public to know what that means and how we get there.
Sure.
And that it's not. Go ahead and tell us, because
as I outlined at the last meeting, so the budget itself is, it's based on our assumption about property tax revenues, in particular for us as a basic aid school district, right? So that's an assumption that we don't know for sure until November, kind of where we stand. There's the potential of us receiving Diablo Canyon funds from the power plant with our current agreement that is currently with the PUC, which would basically put us into a surplus. And so at the current levels right now, in terms of the budget, looking at revenues and expenditures, we are at the $900,000 deficit level, but we still meet all of our reserves levels. The 10% reserve for the board is set, or 3 years out, so all of those things are still met. There's two things that are going to come forward, which I think you had a question about the second one, which is some one-time funds.
Yeah.
So the governor had put one-time funds in the current budget in January, then in May revise actually increased those dramatically. A lot more money, more than our $900,000 potentially that we would receive.
But my understanding is those.
Yeah.
Oh, you about just. They're put off till like 2000, like 3 years from now. So that's going to.
So yeah, I think it's like a year or so. So it's basically it's they call it the wimpy rule, right? That I'll give you a hamburger today, pay me later. So, so we still don't know where that's going to stand though. So there's still the politicking that's happening right now in the state capitol. So are we still going to receive the minimum dollars that the governor talked about in January? Are we going to get the increased amount? Is that where he'll waffle back and forth? But basically what the governor has done is said, hey, we'll pay you more based on kind of the projection, but we're not going to pay you until next year because we want to make sure that next year the budget comes in okay and we have revenues, and then we'll give you the dollars. So all the other groups right now, school services, FICMAT, everybody is saying, hey, don't budget those dollars at this time until you know for sure where you're at. So we will actually have to, and this is what will happen, is after we kind of know for sure what happens in July or by July 1, and there's the pressure to get the budget done by July 1 or they don't get paid, right? The legislators don't. So it's amazing how we pass all of our budgets now in the state of California. But we will do a May revise. So we have 45 days after the budget's passed to, kind of look at everything, relook at where we're at and make any extra decisions or changes that we need to make to this current budget that the board's going to approve tonight.
And then the County Office of Education the County Superintendent is charged with, is it called certifying?
Yeah.
Giving us so we don't get a negative declaration. Mm. And so, again, we're looking at a deficit. So how do we, are we going to end up getting a negative?
So we would not, because most districts in the state of California have to have a 3% reserve level. So this board has chosen a 10% reserve level. And so as long as we maintain that reserve level over the next 3 years, then we will get a positive certification. If we showed on our books that 2 years from now we would be below that, then we would possibly get a qualified budget. If you go negative, that means that you're in a lot of trouble. In terms of you're not going to be able to make your payments. So we should be in positive. I don't see any, in terms of that. I think the board's proactive decisions back in February ensure that we've maintained that positive standing.
So just so everyone knows, there is no change to the budget as it was presented to us at our last meeting and our fully blown examination of the budget and all our Q&A. Just want to clarify that. Mr. Millar?
Thank you. Do we have an anticipated date for the CPU, their decision?
Yeah, and I mean, in talking to PG&E folks and some of their, we're thinking early fall, September, October.
So if the agreements are approved and we receive, I think, the $2 million, mm-hmm. would we revisit this year's budget to decide what to do with that $2
million? So at first interim, that would show up for the board. You would see, we have to see where property tax, did they really come in at 3.5, which we projected, where are we at type of thing?
Or did they come in at 4.5?
Or 4.5 or more, that happens. And so then that would be up to the board at that first interim to make some decisions. Like in the past, we've had some furniture budgets, we bought trucks, we've done some other things with some of those funds when they become available.
You might want to transfer some of it into Fund 20.
Fund 20.
Because we've been sort of going back and forth with it. So.
Okay,
yeah,
good.
So we definitely have a liability there that we want to work on.
I think it's very intelligent to, obviously, not to be counting our chickens. So.
Yes, agreed.
Mr. Unger?
So just a couple of things. I just want to make sure that we clarify when we talk about a 10% budget reserve, why it's important for us as a basic aid school district to have a 10% mm-hmm. budget reserve. Although 3% is the statutory minimum, I think we just want to make sure the public understands that this is a board decision, and it was made in, because as a basic aid school district, we face financial uncertainties. I mean, example number one, of course, is what happened with Diablo Canyon, not only this time, but in 2000, and that we've done that 10% reserve in order to protect the school district and our community. So I just want to make sure that everybody's really clear about that, that we're not hoarding money by any means.
No, no.
And then the second thing I just want to remind everybody of, and we talked about it the last time, is the importance of the 10-year budget projection that you guys made and that you've presented to us before, and that we just can't forget that we've got to be able to really manage our budget well, especially toward the latter part of the 10-year projection as our STRS and PERS and benefit costs rise, and potentially then could really throw us into a budget deficit that would not be covered by our reserves.
Yeah. And, I mean, we are really at the will of the economy as a basic aid school district, specifically because with our property tax. So depending on how little or up our property tax goes, kind of how we go. So having that 10% reserve is huge for us because, again, I'm asking the board to approve this budget tonight. We won't know for sure what our revenues are going to be until next November. And having that ability to... You know, that security aspect of it is critically important. It's also a cash flow issue.
That's what I was going to mention, that we have a cash flow, that we have cash flow issues that districts that are not basic aid school districts have. Would you care to explain that, please?
Yeah, so basically we receive our funds, our property tax funds, twice a year. So there are months, September, October, where we can run very, very low on cash flow. So we can't pay our monthly checks to all of our employees. So our payroll, basically, it gets so low in terms of our check account. Knowing that we are going to receive the money in November, right, our first or December in terms of our first our property tax installment. But during those, it can get very lean throughout the year. So Julie and her staff have to actually make a year-long cash flow projection so that we ensure that we can make payroll and people get paid throughout the year. So it's having those reserves, it basically makes that happen. If we didn't have those, we would have to be asking the board potentially for kind of short-term loans in order to get through those time periods.
I'd like to make a motion that we approve the 2017-18 budget.
We have a motion by Mr. Unger and a second by Mr. Buckman. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you.
The motion passes 7-0.
Yeah, kudos to Julie and her staff. They do a great job. We're very fortunate.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. Thank you. And now we're moving on to item number 9.02, which is the adoption of the Local Control Accountability Plan, or LCAP. And this is the second reading, and this is Mrs. McGrath.
This is. Tonight I bring forward the Local Control Accountability Plan, known as the LCAP. As you know, extensive feedback and input has been gathered throughout the year from many different stakeholders in many different formats. The item was initially brought forward on May 2nd. We've revisited it several times. The official first reading took place on May 16th. As you know, questions were asked, and the superintendent has responded to those in writing and posted those on the website. All districts in California are required to develop this plan, which combines our educational plan with portions of our district budget. We must describe school district goals and actions to achieve those goals for all pupils and especially for identified subgroups. As you know, the LCAP for 17-18 is based around our new 5 focus areas. Based on feedback from many stakeholder groups, including our secondary students, revisions have been made. So this item is being brought forth tonight for a second reading, and tonight we are seeking your approval.
Is there anyone from the public who would like to speak to this item? Seeing no one, go up to the board. Mr. Buckman.
Thanks. This was a great chance to look, and so at the LCAP stuff, and I actually looked through the the accountability plan, the template, and there was some great information in the boxes where you're discussing the district, and great stuff in there. So some of the things that I just want to point out, this first one, just again generally to the public, because I think it's just so telling, and I think it may be an unknown. So I'm just going to our students. It's a discussion of what our students are like. And with the student enrollment of roughly 7,500, nearly 13% are English learners, and 38% are socioeconomically disadvantaged students. And that's just a huge number, and it's huger than it's a larger number than I thought and I knew it was large, and I just really would like everybody, hopefully in the community, to understand that 38% of the students are socioeconomically disadvantaged. The other thing that I thought was interesting in this was the information that you quoted from the California Healthy Kids Survey, which just seems to keep coming up and being important, and it was about the suspension rates. So we have a high suspension rate for students with disabilities, which I found interesting, but we also have a high suspension rate for students of color, so Hispanic and Black. But what was most disturbing to me was the suspension rate for students that are Black or African American. So out of the 67 African American students in our district, it appears to me when reading this, 9 of them were suspended, and I can't do the math right now, but it's about 9% of all of the African American students were suspended. So I am so glad that within this LCAP, these three groups are going to be addressed, and that we're going to be spending the money and the time and the effort to work on these suspension rates. So thank you very much.
You're welcome. Is there anyone else from the board who would like to speak to this item? This is the second reading.
I'd like to make a motion that we adopt the LCAP for 2017.
I'll second that.
There's a motion by Mrs. Sheffer and a second by Mr. Quisenberry. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Passes 7-0. Thank you, Mrs. McGrath.
Thank you.
And you're staying with us. Item number 9.03, the LEA plan.
Yes, tonight I'm also seeking your approval for the LEA plan. So as you know, this is a multi-year plan intended to engage district-wide resources in meeting the educational needs of all of our students. This does include the master plan for English learners, also our very important document of the LEA plan addendum. So the LEA plan addendum does really serve as a guide for us throughout the year. It coordinates with the LCAP and then also with the single plans for student achievement at the site level. The five focus areas are all students achieving academic gains, all student groups, an intentional culture of care, expanding technology innovation, and also strengthening our use of data. Included with each focus area are specific actions and expenditures to meet each goal, as well as the metrics so that we can review our progress along the way. Throughout the school year, ideas for improving our district's educational programs are discussed in a variety of meetings with parents, with students, with teachers and administrators, and these discussions inform our decisions and the revisions that we make to the LEA plan addendum each year. This is the second reading of this document as well, so tonight I do seek your approval.
Is there anyone from the public who would like to address this issue? Seeing no one, Mr. Unger.
So I want to acknowledge the work that everybody has done, both for the LCAP and the LEA plan. It's an amazing amount of work, you know, just Mrs. Shields.
Mrs. Frost.
Mrs. Frost, everybody that was involved in this, I think really kudos to you. I would just point out to the public that the LEA plan was about 250 pages, including the English learner piece. The LCAP was, I believe, 140 pages, something like 114, somewhere around there, down from 140 last year. but that doesn't mean that it was any less substantial. I did want to point out that one thing I just want everybody to be clear about, and I think we all are, but again, I think it's something that needs to be pointed out, that our needs assessment shows that there is a clear achievement gap between our subgroups, particularly, you know, understanding that some are very small numbers, which means that those figures can be distorted based on, you know, a small norm. But we're seeing a really significant achievement gap with our African-American students, our Native American students, our Hispanic students, our EL students, our SED students, and our special education students in both English language and math. And I know that we're working on it. When I look back at the state dashboard, I see that we're making progress, and I think we're to be commended for that. But as everybody knows, we've got more to go. We've got more to do. And then finally, I just want to end with Something that's new, I think, this year, and I know we've talked a little bit about it, but what both the LCAP and I think the LEA plan have done has to provide additional resources to Pacific Beach High School, which is necessary, and I think it's going to be important for them as well. So with that, if there's no other discussion, I would like to move approval of the LEA plan.
Is there a second?
I'll second that.
There's a motion by Mr. Unger and a second by Mr. Quisenberry. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. That passes 7-0.
Thank you.
And also Ms. McGrath is here for the dual enrollment courses. This is a first reading.
This is. Kim, could you select the PowerPoint for me? This is a first reading, and Cuesta College does require a second reading, so I would be happy to revisit with you this topic on our next meeting. So, great, thank you. So dual enrollment, it's not your first year to hear about that, so I'm going to go through some of these things just as a reminder. But dual enrollment is an opportunity for high school students to complete a college-approved curriculum in order to receive academic credits that are both high school credits and community college credits. Also, for career technical education courses, it continues to link our pathways so that we not only have clear pathway completion during high school, but links to post-secondary courses. When we think about why should we consider these dual enrollment courses, you think about a benefit to the students, right? That they're able to really be exposed to college-level learning while still in high school, to kind of demystify that experience and hopefully encourage students and let them see that, hey, they really can accomplish this, and maybe it's not quite so scary or intimidating as they might think. Challenging learning opportunities while they're in high school, also increasing our post-secondary aspirations is one of the hopes that we would have in making this. Also kind of a savings, right? So if a couple of courses that you can knock out during high school just saves you as you're a college-bound student headed to begin to pay for your courses. For teachers, it allows a collaboration opportunity. Often with some of our CTE courses or other courses at a high school level, they don't have a lot of collaboration opportunities when you're the only teacher or one or two teachers teaching that topic. So it allows the opportunity to collaborate with Cuesta College professors that teach a similar or matching curriculum. And they are also compensated for the extra work related to that. So for students, as we talked about, they do follow Cuesta's registration. There's no fees for that. They can stay right on the high school campus and yet receive academic credit for both areas. They do kind of learn the community college process and the rules that they have to follow related to that. When we look at what courses are involved for 17-18, a couple of things to keep in mind is a lot of these agreements, first of all, have to be based on the high school teacher's credential. So they have to meet Cuesta's requirements for credentialing. So it depends on what the high school teacher's credential is. Does that match Cuesta's requirement or not? And then the second thing is you have to kind of create that agreement between the high school teacher and the Cuesta teacher. And they need to come to an agreement that the Cuesta curriculum can and will be taught within a high school setting. Also, you'll see additional courses offered at Slo High, partly because of the two things I just mentioned, but also just because with almost twice as many students, there's obviously additional elective options there. So these are the courses that we're hoping to be considered. This is the first reading tonight, so these agreements are annual agreements and have been made between our teachers and theirs.
Is there anyone from the public who would like to speak to this item? Seeing no one, I just have a quick question first. What about our PAC Beach students? Are they able to take advantage of these courses?
Absolutely. If any courses that are offered, then it's the same sort of thing, kind of an agreement between. It could be if they've taken them before they arrive at PAC Beach. You'll see that the courses here, if I can go back, many of these right now are CTE courses that may not be able to be offered at PAC Beach
yet, or, you know, looking at that. Within the LEA plan, we looked at some additional funding based on some of your ideas, and I think looking at what career tech education opportunities for Pack Beach would be a really great move for us, in addition to STEAM, right? It's been kind of a STEAM focus, but when you think about our goal of having students leave with skills and, you know, being prepared to walk into a well-paying job, I think that's also a great goal for Pack Beach. So currently, it's kind of CTE heavy, and we'll look at continuing to improve that.
Mrs. Sheffer.
I have a couple of questions about how this works. One of them was Pack Beach, so thanks for asking that. Secondly, and some of it is just clarifying, I think, things we already do or that are already available, such as if a San Luis High student wants to take a Questa class over the summer and have that count for high school, is that as well as, is it, can it, going to Questa and taking a class, mm-hmm. can that be considered dual enrollment with the high school?
It is actually different than dual enrollment. Some courses students can choose to go to Questa and take. The key for us is in K-12 education, we have to meet standards, right? We have to meet the state standards. Sometimes those courses at Questa or Hancock match, and sometimes they don't. Our policy states that you have to have an 80% match. So if you think of an example, history courses, maybe you're an easy example. For us, we teach U.S. history that spans a large number of years. Oftentimes at community college, you may have like just a Vietnam War course, right? So they're not going to be able to cover and to have an equivalent match of an 80% match if it's more of a specified course. If it does create an 80% match, then they are allowed to take that and receive high school credit. Different, though, than dual enrollment, in that dual enrollment, the high school student is actually sitting at the high school, at our comprehensive high school, and receiving credit for both.
Okay. So just to clarify, then, under the history example you provided, that student would receive Questa credit, but not San Luis Obispo or Morro Bay High School credit.
Exactly. And there are some courses that do have an 80% match. And I always recommend for students to start with their counselor. Mm-hmm. Start with a high school counselor and ensure that if you're trying to get high school and college credit, that you start with a counselor first and they can ensure that it's a match or not.
Okay. Secondly, if a Morro Bay High School student, I know that they have auto classes at Morro Bay High School, and they have an amazingly gorgeous facility there. But if that student wanted to be able to have it count as Questa credit as well, could a Morro Bay High student come to San Luis Obispo High School to take an auto class?
We haven't worked out details of that. I think
it could logistically be challenging, but mm-hmm. I'm just wondering. So
especially with semester and trimester schedules and times of start times and that kind of thing. Right. Logistically might be tricky. In theory, I think it's acceptable. Logistically might be a little tricky at this point.
Well, how about getting classes at
Mr. Quisenberry?
Thank you very much.
You have to. Mrs. Roger. Mrs. Roger.
Oh, Ellen asked your question.
Okay.
I see.
Okay, thank you. Hi. The answers to some of the questions that I posed about this to Mrs. McGrath were included in her presentation, so I appreciate that. But I do have one remaining sort of, it's not really a question, it's it expands on what's here, and the rest of the board might be interested in it. I wondered why, if there's engineering and drawing and design 2 at SLO High, one would assume that engineering and design 3 at Morro Bay High School must have been preceded by a second level of that course, and why was it not included? And the answer that Mrs. McGrath gave me, if I understood, was that it has to do with, she believes it has to do with the engineering drawing and design designation at SLO High School is following an architectural pathway where the engineering and design, absent the drawing, is following an engineering pathway. So they're not exactly apples to apples mm-hmm. in what's presented in the courses, and therefore the two course is not reflected here because it isn't aligned.
Mm-hmm. You remember the very colorful, beautiful charts that Liz Moore made for us that showed the CTE pathways? That's when you think of it that way, that's what it comes down to. So because of credentials and different passions and things that people have different strengths at, you know, at the high schools, some may have courses that guide towards an engineering pathway, manufacturing pathway, architectural pathway. They all sound and feel pretty similar, but are actually, you know, different pathways that lead toward different skills, different industry, different certifications.
And given that we do have this beautiful new shop at Morro Bay High School, I understand that we are our instructor is in the process of trying to achieve the necessary certifications so that he will be able to articulate with Cuesta College in the future at some point. Thank you.
As Mrs. McGrath said, this is a first reading as required by Cuesta College, so we'll be reviewing this at our next meeting as well. Thank you.
We cannot.
So, thank you.
Thank you.
And now we're moving on to item number 9.06, and that's Measure D.
Proposed changes to board policy 9.05.
Oh, excuse me, I jumped right by. I wondered why you were staying with us, Mrs. McGrath. Sorry about that. Yes, now we go back to 9.05, proposed changes to board policy, high school graduation requirements.
Great. Tonight I would like to bring forward two suggested changes to board policy revision that lowers graduation credits at Slo High to 265 credits and also eliminates the technology literacy requirement for high schools. So to think about the first one, for the past about 10 years, students have been able to earn 75 credits a year for a total of 300 credits. The graduation requirement during that time was 280 total credits. However, now primarily because of three trimesters of math classes, students are able to earn 70 credits a year for 3 years and then 75 in their senior year. That totals 285 credits. However, the graduation requirement still sits at 280. This leaves only a 5-credit cushion. In the past, we've changed the total number of credits required for graduation a few times and have always included a 20-credit cushion. This is common practice for comprehensive high schools across the state. In addition, each year a student is only able to earn 70 credits. It's given counselors kind of the tedious job of hand-waving 5 credits each year. So it's obviously a time-consuming manual process that's been placed on our counselors that we would want to try to resolve for them. This change to allow for 265 credits at San Luis Obispo High School would solve both of these issues. The second issue is a recommendation to eliminate technology literacy requirement from our high school graduation requirement for all three of our high schools. As we have implemented the use of Google Apps for Education and implemented mobile technology throughout our district, the need for one very basic course requirement at a high school level really no longer exists. The use of technology is embedded throughout a student's coursework. For example, if you think about as a student progresses through our district, sixth grade is entirely one-to-one. Required English courses at Morro Bay function through Google Classroom. Required health classes at San Luis Obispo High School completely function online. We think about as students navigate through their San Luis Coastal experience, technology is just much more integrated into what they're doing. And although I wouldn't say that you're not going to hit classes or maybe even an entire school year where you have limited technology experiences, throughout your experience in San Luis Coastal, the basic requirements that were part of this computer apps class that used to exist are very much embedded, and really we go above and beyond that now. So having our high school students require that at that level just seems kind of an antiquated concept at this point. So I propose changing San Luis Obispo High School credits to 265 and eliminating the technology literacy requirement.
Is there anyone from the public who would like to speak to this matter? Seeing no one, Mrs. Roger.
Thank you. I do understand, Mrs. McGrath, that throughout the course of study in San Luis Coastal, we are introducing and expanding on technology literacy. But what about students who transfer in from other districts or other states where they don't have a technology emphasis, and so come to us at the high school level who don't lacking the computer skills that our students, the ones who've been with us all along, have? Well, how do we plan to address their needs?
What I imagine is that just as counselors analyze transcripts and talk to students about what they've accomplished, the skills they have, where they're headed, what skills they need, they're going to help place them into appropriate classes to meet their needs. So as we see a student that has had limited to no technology experience, I think would be unusual coming from, most school experiences these days, especially you have to remember the low level that this computer apps class was expecting, right? But a counselor and teachers could absolutely guide a student through courses that would help meet their individual needs.
So we would still be able to provide courses with basic technology information to students who need them? Is that what I'm hearing?
What I would say is the basic portions are embedded within classes, but there are your experiences that you receive during regular classes. Then there's also additional, more tech-specific courses available for students that need that or want that.
Okay, thank you.
Mrs. Sheffer.
Does changing the graduation requirement have any impact on personnel, on staff?
In staff in being like that we would need less staff or less teachers specifically, is that what you're asking?
Yes.
No.
Thank you.
Mr. Hunger.
I must say I'm really happy that we're finally ditching the technology literacy program. It was my dream about 15 years ago when we instituted this that we would have technology infused throughout the school day and throughout the classes that all of our students are taking. It's taken us a while to get there, and I'm really glad that we are.
I'd just like to add that having had two children who went through Slo High and had wall-to-wall academic classes, it's just such a wonderful opportunity to have an elective, one of those just elusive, wonderfully delightful electives. So thank you for proposing that. This is a first reading, but we do have the option of passing on the second reading if you'd like to make a... Oh, Mr. Millar, I'm so sorry.
I was going to propose that we act on it tonight. I don't see the necessity for a second reading if the board's in agreement.
I'd just like to suggest, and possibly not on this board policy, but we are getting into the habit of doing board policies on the first read, and it's been recommended by CSBA that often we might want to go to the second read so the public has a chance to
I withdraw my response.
Well, can we discuss this? Is there anyone else with an opinion on what Mr. Buckman just? I'm just asking if there's any other discussion regarding what Mr. Buckman just raised. So the motion has been withdrawn.
Can we bring it back to on the consent agenda for next time, perhaps?
Is that acceptable to you, Mrs. McGrath?
Absolutely.
All right. We'll look at that on the consent agenda the next time around. Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you.
And we're moving to 9.06, Measure D. And this will be Mr. Pinkerton. Oh, no, it will not. So sorry.
I'm going to have Mr. Palazzo.
Good evening. Got a little bit of an audience tonight, so this is good. We're moving in the right direction. So tonight in front of you, good news and good news on the Bellevue-Santa Fe front. What's in front of you tonight is an amendment for architectural services, and what that stems from is a couple things. One is we just last week submitted our grant application to the state for our reservation of funds for the Bellevue-Santa Fe Charter School project under the state bond program. They had actually opened the window for charter schools and have allocated $500 million of the bond funds to start reserving those funds for charter schools within the program. So the deadline was yesterday, and we got our application in early last week. So we were definitely under the wire. We've confirmed everything's been received, etc. And it took literally almost the full 3 months to get the application put together. There was a lot of data that Mr. Getz had to pull together on his school itself. So kudos to him for pulling that together in a very timely fashion with all of the other things he's doing. That said, the grant allows us to do more than our original project we had envisioned of just replacing six of the classrooms. It actually is going to give us additional funding to go in and renovate the existing relocatables that we're staying, as well as the main classroom wing. We're projected and we're reserving funds in the total of about $2.6 million. With the $2.75 million we've allocated to that site, we're looking at a just under $6 million project. So that's a huge, it's a 50-50 match, so for every dollar we spend, we can get a dollar up to that $2.6 million. So this is a huge, huge thing for that site. Now that said, our original agreement with the architect was only for replacing the six classroom buildings, not going into the existing building and doing renovations, not doing extensive site work around the site that would be required for the renovation of the existing classroom, main classroom wing. So this amendment does a couple things. One is we've asked for a fixed scope and a fixed fee from the architect, which our original agreement was kind of a sliding scale of a construction cost. And we've asked for them to have a little more detail in terms of the scope that they're providing. And so that's what this amendment represents tonight. We did a rough calculation on had we stayed with the existing agreement and just let it float up and just added the scope, and we would probably be paying a little to the tune of about $100,000 more for that same scope of service. So this kind of, and it's the way that the agreement's written is based on the price of the relocatables, their fee goes up, but their scope really stays the same. So as we've discussed, we're going with a little nicer relocatables because we have the grant money, but we're keeping our architectural costs in line with what they should be. So this is a huge win for us, and we'd request approval for this so we can continue moving forward.
Is there anyone from the public who would like to speak to this item? Mrs. Roger.
Thank you. Mr. Palazzo, I got a little confused there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we applied for the state grant funding, mm-hmm. but we're proceeding as though we are receiving it. Are we assured of receiving it?
Well, what we're doing is these are relocatables is the bulk of the work. We're going to get the design work done for both the relocatables and the classroom wing renovation. If we don't get these funds, which I think we have a very good chance because we're in the first wave, there's $500 million allocated for this. We're a rural school, and we meet a couple of the boxes they wanted us to check in terms of where they're giving priority. So I think we have a really good shot in scoring high in the points category and getting the funds in this first round. But if we don't, we still have other avenues of modernization money that we can go after that we would have to use in that building as well. So but the architect is the first step that we have to do to get that going.
Is it the modernization money is outside of Measure D?
Yes, that's also state money. But they haven't released that yet. So that's why this has been, they've opened the window for this so we can actually go after it. So, we're kind of right on that cusp of we got to get some things going. We've got to get our plans approved at DSA, but we've got to do it a little bit on the gamble of getting that state money. But either way, we've got to build something out there and we've got a project committed that we need to get going on. So,
but for the charter school money, if you were laying odds, mm-hmm. based on all the criteria that we do meet.
I'm not a betting man, but I would go for this one.
Thank you.
How's that?
Mr. Quisenberry.
Well, I think Mrs. Rogers got most of the questions I wanted to ask. So this is not the money the government's got hidden in the shoe. This is money that will come at some point. Okay.
Yeah, this
he's not going to delay this one for...
Well,
no.
I can't say that,
but
this is a reservation of funds. So once you have the reservation, so then it becomes a cash flow issue. Once we have our reservation of funds, then the process starts. And, and again, the governor may hang on to that money for 2-3 years. In the meantime, we have cash, so we can go do the project, and then we pay ourselves back. So as long as we're staying on our deadlines, meeting all the requirements of the grant, and the governor's holding the money, what they've typically done is you're allowed to refund yourself. So,
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Is the floodplain issue, is that part of this, or was that mm-hmm. was that already remediated?
No, that will be remediated as part of the project. So
okay,
we're
great.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay.
And Mr. Millar.
Thank you. So, Anthony, this Exhibit D will be added to or to the existing agreement that we already have with RRM?
Correct.
And
yeah, go ahead.
Is there current Exhibit D that it's going to replace?
Yes.
Or?
Yeah, this takes out the sliding scale fee provision and puts in a fixed fee provision into
okay.
that.
And I'm fine with that, but I think in the future where we're altering a contract, we should probably have the original contract handy just to see where it fits in, but I'm
okay.
fine with this.
Yeah,
this
Deidre Sakai with DWK, we had her draft all of this
okay.
Because it was a little unique, kind of modifying a sliding scale to a fixed fee, so she said, no, we can do this for you. It would be better if you did. I didn't want to try to do this one myself.
That's good. And she thought the better approach would be to alter the contract with the new exhibit rather than start all over.
So I asked, and I said, should I just start with a new fixed fee? She said, no, this would be cleaner just because you've got this going, but I will send you the template for fixed fee contracts moving forward because no one's using sliding scales. She's like, you should be using this one over here. So
okay.
that's what we're doing.
Excellent. Thank
okay.
you.
Terrific. Well, we can take action on this item tonight.
I'd make a motion that we approve the amendment to the architectural agreement to RRM with regard to Bellevue Santa Fe.
I'll second.
We have a motion by Mrs. Schiffer and a second by Mr. Millar. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. That passes 7-0.
Great. Thank you so
Mr.
much.
Thank you, Mr. Palazzo. And now Mr. Pinkerton.
Yeah, so in our, as I discussed a little bit earlier with our design build as well as lease leaseback contracts, there's a process that the board has to go through. So one was the selection process of selecting a lease-leaseback contractor, design-build contractor. From there, it went to the actual contract itself, having the board approve the contract. We're going to, again, at the next study session, go through those lease-leaseback contracts because they can be very confusing, very long, but hopefully get the board up to date on those. And then from after that, after the plans are done, architect agreements, in this case, this is part of the design build project at San Luis Obispo High School. That's what this GMP that we're asking the board to approve tonight is part of that contract. So about half the campus at San Luis Obispo High School is under the design build. The other half is under lease-leaseback. So we have tried with the tennis courts, with temporary housing, some things like that to kind of get the projects going, get things established there. Our hope was actually to do the 500 wing as well as what we have tonight, which is the robotics, fixing the robotics room, which got basically displaced with the fire, right? We also have at the auto shop, there's one of the floors there is actually the engine floor, and it's slanted. So it's hard to have engines on wheels in a slanted room, so this would help Mr. Olympia with that. And then with all the new CT funds, we've got some new machinery that has come. In particular, we heard about the Teacher of the Year, Mr. Fay. And so we're looking at before we go in and do all of the work in the 300 wing, putting this new door in is going to help us get his new equipment into that building. So those are kind of, again, some quick start projects, kind of get going. They don't need to go to DSA aspect of it. That's why the other projects are taking longer to get through that DSA process. So this was just one more way for us to get some things accomplished, let people see that, yes, we are. Yes, Measure D is making a difference. Yes, we're getting there. We're about to hit a wave of a lot of projects, a lot of construction happening on campus, but that planning phase has taken a long time to get there. So tonight, the next phase after the contracts is to actually have the board vote on the GMP, so the guaranteed maximum price. So plans have been made. Gary Architect with DLR is part of the ACME. With a design build, has made plans for those three projects, the door, the new floor in the automotive classroom, as well as the new robotics room. Put those together. The design build company, contractor has gone out, got sub bids, And so those bids are actually listed on the last sheet, basically, that you have in front of you. And Kim can pull that up at the end. Yeah.
Right.
So these are the cost of the work. So there are MEP contractors, mechanical, electrical, and plumbing, that kind of have some of the bigger project bids that you would see. And so those groups that work with Acme or Acme currently, I believe the MEP contractors are Toma Electric right now. It's Cadex Plumbing and MNP, as well as I believe Mano Construction is another MEP that's kind of tied to the Acme so far. So it's nice to see some local companies tied into the work at our high schools. So they take the project, they take that out, they bid the work. So with this GMP, they've bid the work out to subs. They come back, they have that. We've gone through the bidding cycle itself, the overall price look. And so then they basically bring to us this guaranteed maximum price of what they think it's going to cost based on the bids, based on the visual, looking inside, those types of things. So that's kind of the bottom amount to do those classrooms, the work that we talked about. There's a contingency kind of built in at the bottom, so as well as the total GMP. So Mr. Holcomb, you want to share a little bit more about guaranteed maximum price and how this ties in?
Please, keep it short.
This really is just a tiny piece. We have an overall GMP and a not to exceed. So this is taking this one little project and saying, now this is a real number. The rest of them are pretty much budgets. So as we see these real numbers follow through that summary sheet, which is in the back of the contract, then you'll see where we are, actual budgeted, pretty much like your checkbook. There's the balance, here's the check. So this is the first check we're writing, in a sense, to the contractor that's a real number. And you'll be able to approve each of those real numbers as we go across. You'll see very early, if we get in any kind of budget trouble, you'll see it. So, but that's why we're looking forward to August so much, in that because we have one contractor for design, build, and leaseback, we'll be able to balance all of the budgets and the specifications and what we're actually delivering in terms of equity. So we don't want one brilliant classroom and one kind of ugh. So that's a great process. We're really looking forward to that process in August to deviate from the discussion a little bit. But so that's kind of how this process works. And unfortunately, there'll be a multitude of these contract addendums or amendments that you'll see, because that actually says within our, if you read through the contract, and if you want to go to sleep quickly, go to work on that. But you'll see that the real numbers start becoming, as time goes on, they'll solidify across that sheet. So it should be a good process, and very, very much, you should be very much in control of the way those numbers develop. Does that make sense, I hope?
Thank you.
So we're gonna dive a lot more into this, because we have several projects that are coming forward to the board in terms of them putting together GMPs. But I want to have the board understand how the bids happen, how that ties in, how the bids are opened, that whole process that happens. I want to get you more ingrained in, so that when you see something like this come forward, you're going to have a much better understanding and knowledge of what you're voting on. So that'll be Thursday at the study session next week. We'll dive into it even more at that point. So we do have some. So the annex is coming to you, the old gym work, the J wing at Morro Bay High. I mean, so there's a lot of projects that are going to be hitting here probably middle summer in terms of these bids and GMPs and putting these estimates together. So based on that overall budget picture as well, that's tied into it.
Thank you. Is there anyone from the public who would like to speak to this item? Mr. Millar.
Thank you. Here's the downside of providing the existing contract, as I suggested in the last one, because all the things are lettered, and this one is a number. Exhibit is a number. So that bothers my sense of legal drafting. Mm-hmm. But So you might want to make it Exhibit A instead of Exhibit 1. Okay. But anyway, so then my follow-up question to what Mr. Holcomb was saying, so as these numbers solidify as we get these projects through, is that providing us feedback on how well we're doing in the process of estimating and just our whole, I know we'll have a lot of design bid or design build stuff already committed.
Yeah.
But, okay.
We've gone through a process every step of the way, right? The schematic design went out and got bids. So our bridging docs with design build, we got estimates. So, you know, that's what we're based on. Our lease spec projects all got estimates at schematic design. Now we've gone to DEDs, we've got an estimate. So we're, you know, we're kind of watching ourselves as we go. But then this is the, you know, this is the where you actually bid the work and you see, like, you know, how much did construction costs go up over the past 2 years? Or, I mean, where it becomes a real number to us. Everything else is based, you know, a Saylor estimate, and hey, this is what we think it'll cost. And but when you get that actual bid, that's critical for us.
So it gives us forward visibility.
Absolutely.
As was the earlier Measure D discussion, where we're going to start to see how much each one of these projects costs,
yes,
and we can get a sense of of the scope of what we can accomplish.
Yes.
Okay.
And I have that. I mean, I have it laid out based on those estimates that we've been doing for all the projects. So it's really, it's great. You know, it's great for me in particular, who's overseeing this budget, to kind of get those, you know, more real feelings for what things cost. And I will say probably our biggest project that's been the toughest one to kind of wrap our hands around is the 100 building at San Luis Obispo High School. So that's been our biggest kind of focus with the design build firm in terms of what we're going to do there, how do we get it accomplished, because that it really dictates the budget with utilities and all those types of things. But we're well on our way. Again, those designs are coming up over the next month, and so we feel good about where we're at.
So this is potentially... Oh,
Catherine, just a quick question. In the work we're approving tonight, or we're being asked to approve tonight, the robotics lab, there was attendant damage to that in that fire, smoke damage and what have you. Is that being covered under this contract, or is that any remedial work being done separately under our insurance?
So that's through insurance, and that's mainly going to be through the 300, you know, the 300 buildings when we go through those facilities in terms of adding those insurance funds to complete those projects in the CTE classrooms.
So the work won't be done separately. It will be done by the contractor who's doing,
yes, separate
the work, but
totally
the funds for that particular portion of the work will come from our insurance.
So this is actually, we're putting the robotics lab in a completely different space.
Totally new. It's a
completely different space
thing.
Yeah, than where it is. So it's actually going right next to, there were two former rooms by the auto shop that we had some damage after one of the rains, one of the drains. So we're basically, which is the current wrestling room, or weight room, I should say. So that great kind of CT space there with the outdoor area for the robotics and robots to do everything. So it's that area that's being remodeled. So not the 300 classroom that was
I'm remembering now. I think when we toured SLO High, we looked at that space. So okay, thank you very much.
Sure.
Chair will entertain a motion if anyone is interested.
I'll make a motion to approve item 9.07, Measure D, SLO High School Design Build Modification Number 1 for Acme Construction at a guaranteed maximum price.
I'll second that.
We have a motion by Mrs. Roger and a second by Mr. Unger. All in favor?
Aye.
I believe that was a 7-0.
Thank you.
Thank you. We now have the action consent agenda. Please let me know if you want to pull any of these items. Item 10.01,
Okay.
10.02, approval of furniture and equipment requests. 10.03, approval of purchase orders and CalCard purchases. 10.04, approval of warrants and payroll. Uh, 10.05, disposition of surplus property.
10.06, approval of summer field study trip requests. 10.07, approval to submit Morro Bay High School and San Luis Obispo High School Agricultural Career Technical Education Incentive Grants. 10.08, appointment of representatives and alternatives to athletic leagues for 2017-18. And 10.09, renew legal services contract with Dennis, Wolliver, and Kelly. Okay, we have items number...
I was going to make a motion. Go ahead.
Oh, yes, please, Mr.
Okay.
Moore.
I'd like to move approval of 10.02, 10.0...
I'm sorry, Mr. Mark.
No, that's okay. 10.02, 10.03, 10.05, 10.06, 10.07, and 10.09.
Nine was pulled.
Eight.
So it's eight, is I think you want, the one you want?
Eight
so
was pulled, I think.
No, nine was pulled.
Nine was pulled. So you're asking for eight. So you're asking for two, three, five, six, seven, and eight.
Yes,
is that correct?
Please.
I'll second that.
I tried.
Okay, so there's a motion by Ms. Mr. Millar. Mr. Buckman. A motion by Mr. Buckman and a second by Mr. Millar for items 2, 3, 5, 6, 7, and 8. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. The 7-0. And Mr. Unger pulled 10.0.
That's right.
Did you pull 10.01?
Jim pulled 10.
I did, yes, indeed. I did so because I noticed that Nan Smith Nardella is retiring from Morro Bay High School, and I just wanted to mention what a wonderful person she is, like many, many of our support staff in this district. Nan started off, I believe, as the English Department Secretary when we had such people, such personnel, such positions, and she was wonderful to work with there, and then she became the Secretary or administrative assistant to the dean, where she had to deal with the sometimes the hooligans at school, and she was had great equanimity, was really wonderful with the kids, and I want to wish her a very happy retirement.
And actually, I think she's been with the district longer than Morro Bay High, because I remember her at Sunnyside School in 2000 when I was first elected. So
I believe she did a stint at Baywood as well. So I'd like to second your appreciative comments.
Good. And then I will move approval of 10.01 on the personnel items.
I'll second that.
Okay. There is a motion by Mr. Quisenberry, seconded by Mr. Unger, to approve item 10.01. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Passes 7-0. 10.04 and 10.09.
10.04 I pulled because I have to recuse myself. My wife works for PMSM Architects, and they are on the payroll list or the warrant list.
Having Mr. Millar recuse himself, I'd like to move approval of 10.04.
And I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion by Mr. Quisenberry, second by Mrs. Roger. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. That passes 6 with 1 abstention. And Mr. Millar, you were
And finally, I just wanted to ask a quick question about the renewal of the legal services contract. Are we renewing at the same rates and costs and charges?
I will double check on the rates and the charges. I believe they're the same. The new protocol from DWK is a personal annual request to go before the board. And I thought since they're doing the work for Measure D, that I think prudent to do that. So I will double check on the rates. I believe they're the same though.
Okay, great. Thank you. And I will move approval of 10.09.
There's a motion by Mr. Millar and second by Mrs. Roger on 10.09. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. That passes 7-0. Advanced agenda. I have a question for discussion among the board, if you are interested or not, in an item that would have to do with a study session or an item on the subject of board policy as it relates to student discipline vis-a-vis end-of-year activities. to reflect the values of the community and the district. I don't know if you guys heard that conversation, but do you have an interest in that?
I would support that.
Okay. Okay. Sidebar over there. Just for a moment of clarification, this side of the table showed some interest in an item or a study session in the future to review board policy vis-a-vis graduation and end-of-year activities to reflect the values of the community and the district. And the question was, is there interest in discussing that among the board? Now I'm looking to this end of the table because this end is. Okay. We have So we have four people, so I guess we have a majority here on just to put it on the agenda. Beg pardon, Mr. Buckman.
My understanding is you only need one other person.
That's true.
Well,
to actually, then we would discuss it, whether we actually wanted to. I think
is not my recollection is the protocol is that if there's support, then we would bring it forward as an item, whether we really want to bring it forward as an item, right? I think that's the next step.
It's actually my recollection that we could do that with more than if there were more than two people on the bid. So we could meet. We could skip that step if there's a majority, I believe.
I don't remember setting it that way.
This is my recollection.
And I think the second step, if I may, is to clarify exactly what it is that we're talking about. So
that's my recollection.
Does that
and I'd like to have more clarification on what it is we're talking about.
That would take place at a.
At a future board meeting.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
So as a clarification, we would move this as a discussion to the board as to whether or not they want to agendize it at a future board meeting. Is that what I'm hearing? Work it up. Prepare this through clerk as a discussion for the board's consideration, yes or no, for whether you want to agendize this at a future meeting. I could clarify that in Friday notes as to what that would look like.
And I'm fine with that, but my understanding of the process was in part, so when you bring it back from clerk, that the folks who have the interest in it and want to pursue it can make sure you've captured what it is they're interested in and that kind of feedback. So, okay.
Yes, that's my understanding.
Okay, thank you,
okay,
Dr. Crater. We'll do that. Now... we have reports by board members. Mrs. Roger.
No, I have an advance agenda item.
Oh, you do? Okay, sorry.
Or a suggestion, I guess, for an advance agenda item. I have an interest in learning more about restorative justice and how we might wish to apply the precepts of restorative justice in our district, but my suggestion would be I have an interest in pursuing that at the board retreat in July.
Okay.
I'm wondering, does anyone else have interest in hearing more about that?
I think what we'll be doing is the board subcommittee will be receiving recommendations from the board as to what they want. The topics of the retreat to be, would that be acceptable to you? And Mrs. Holmes will be sending out, I believe we'll be sending out a request, under one of our names, somebody will be sending out a request to you, to the board, for recommendations on what they want on the agenda for the retreat.
Okay, that's a fine way to handle it. That's great.
Okay.
Thank you.
Because we have the subcommittee, so that was my understanding.
But to clarify, then, will the subcommittee be making the decision as to what actually is discussed at the board retreat?
I believe that the subcommittee. I can't speak for the subcommittee, but I think that since this is our retreat, the subcommittee can take requests from people. The subcommittee can make, make a recommendation. But it's our retreat, and I don't see the subcommittee charged with developing the agenda without the consent of the full board.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. So now we move on to board member reports. Does anyone have a board member report? Dr. Fusenberry.
Yes, I have a report, and
an announcement. I just got from the food bank that they are going to continue their program that they've had in the past several years for free summer meals, and I'm sure that will come at the next board meeting. That will be explained to us in a little more detail, and I'm sure that information will be getting out to the schools. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Also, I wanted to mention that, like many of the board members here, I have had an opportunity to go to a few things. I went to the BITSA colloquium, which was fun. It was fun to see that among our new teachers, our teachers that had gone through that program, were a former Memorial Bay High student, and I believe he was the student body president.
Really?
What's yeah, I think it was 1999.
Huh, okay.
His year of graduation. And also the daughter of a current teacher and a retired teacher who is a graduate of SLO High School. So that's good news. It's great to have our former students and come back and teach in the district. Went to the Morro Bay High School FFA Awards Banquet. And when I first came up here in 1988, I had no experience with Future Farmers of America. And, to say I thought they would be all hayseeds and the program would be, you know, lots of boots and belt buckles, and it still is to a certain degree. That's wonderful. But the kids learn a great deal from that program about conducting meetings and parliamentary procedure and, you know, plus all the other activities that they do with animals at the fair and so forth, and a lot of leadership skills, building leaders and so forth, and it's a great program. And I hope that we continue to have it for many, many years to come, and then we support it. And then finally, the C.L. Smith groundbreaking was a big hit with my grandson, and it was well done. So thanks to the folks that put that on.
I'm still disappointed you didn't wear your superhero outfit, though. Mrs. Sheffer.
I also attended the C.L. Smith groundbreaking, as well as the, I can't remember the official name of it, the day at the high school where the Tiger Olympics. And it was, I was there for a couple of hours, and it was such well-orchestrated chaos. That's the only way I could describe it. It was really fun. One of the things that was fun was seeing the high school kids running up to their teachers from elementary school. Oh. And they were so happy to have the opportunity to see their teachers. And the students attending were kind of in awe of the big campus, but having a great time. But it was noisy, but it was, people did a great job of keeping track of where the kids were and what they were supposed to be doing. All the kids were very engaged that I saw. I visited kids doing theater things, improv, and lots of sporting events, and it was really fun. And then last week I attended the final DLAC meeting of the year, and I love those meetings. It was great. I typically have another commitment on the Thursday nights when those meetings are held, but once a year they have one on a Wednesday. So, and I was very impressed. They were dealing with the consolidated application, and the questions and the depth. It really was great to see what a sense of what goes on at our schools, both programmatically and financially. They are deeply committed, and you could tell how hard they've worked to make these connections and know how it works at all levels. I think there was a parent there from almost every school site. It was very well attended, and it was very impressive. It's a great group.
Mr. Unger.
So I also got to go to the BITSA colloquium, and it was just a really great event. Really wonderful to see all the brand new couple of year teachers, kids that I've known. One of the students, one of the teachers actually was in my Boy Scout troop, so it was really cool. I went to the Del Mar Open House, which is always fun. It's a great school, and I had a really good time. Some of the teachers dressed up as Revolutionary War folks, and just the fifth grade teachers, so it was real cool. I went to the I went along with a number of board members to the Baywood 40th anniversary, which was really impressive and really darn fun. I'm not sure if it's on the school website, but there was a video done with just all the pictures and everything. And what was real fun was going back and seeing pictures of teachers back in the 90s who we know today, you know, and go, I know that person. I also went to as a student teacher supervisor, we had our student teacher consulting teacher recognition, and my student teacher was at Morro Bay High School. Just to be able to see fresh faces, young students wanting to become teachers, it was really exciting. And these were all special education graduates, so they all have jobs and they're all on their way. And then finally, I just want to take a moment of personal privilege to recognize the Morro Bay High Senior Awards tonight. And I specifically want to talk about a woman named Jillian Piper, who won the Marguerite B. Unger Memorial Vocal Arts Scholarship tonight. Aww. And we want to congratulate her.
Aww. And what a nice bequest that is. And we have one more item, actually.
I'm sorry.
Wait,
okay.
No,
I can't see your...
I'll get a red nose.
Yeah,
right.
We need that.
So I just want to talk about five of the many events that I was able to attend, and a lot of the board members were there. I actually saw Catherine at the... We served dinner at the relay. But I have to say one of the highlights for me at the end of the year this year was to work with the chaperones at the Gay Straight Alliance prom. It was last Saturday night. And just want to send a shout-out to all the students who helped organize it, who helped design it, who played the music, but also to the teachers and administrators that were there. So Julie Mamo, Nick Frost, I'm going to mess this name, Bridget Bogost?
Bogost.
And Anna-Marie Fella. And Craig Stewart was there. And it really was a special event. Last night I was honored to help present awards at the Los Osos Middle School Awards Night. Absolutely blown away by the number of students that were there. I know it was more than 100 and possibly close to 200. No, there were more than 100 students there that received awards, everything from having a 5.0 GPA and an outstanding on their citizenship all the way through their time at the school. It was absolutely amazing. I also got to attend the FFA awards for San Luis High School. And special thanks to Anna Bates and Jody Evans for their work they did. It was so obvious that the students, it just was a relationship that was way beyond teacher and student. The two teachers are just well loved by all the students. And let's see, I also want to thank, there were 28 graduates, 1972 graduates from Morro Bay High School, who along with students recently did a 24-hour relay riding their bicycles around the track at Morro Bay High School, and they raised $2,400 for the track team for next year. And lastly, this was a very strange one. Aaron Primer, our new food service director, asked if I would be take part in a USDA survey on sodium levels in food lunches and spend some time working on research and talking with Aaron about it. It took about an hour and a half, and it was just great to be able to talk about the innovations that are going on in our food service program. Just a little bit of what's been going on.
Thank you, Mr. Unger. Mr. Unger, do you have
just one more thing? I wanted to mention to everybody here and actually to the public that the California Department of Education has a new app that I believe just went live today that allows... using your smartphone or tablet, access to every school in California. When you pull up, after you download the app, it pulls up a map and shows you what the schools are within your particular region and your map area. You can touch the particular school, and it goes straight to the California website, where it shows the
the test results, the demographics of the school. It is an amazing piece of work, and I would highly recommend it for everybody.
What's the app called?
I believe the California Schools app is what it's called.
It'll be in Friday notes. Thank you, everyone. And Ms. Lang, did you want to present this informational item?
No.
No, okay. That is just for our benefit then. Thank you very much for staying. And so we will adjourn then and meet again on the 15th at our study session for Measure D. Good night.
Cool. Thank you.